Hours after the Supreme Court's decision to legalize homosexual marriage, we spoke to Princeton University law professor Dr. Robert George.
Justices and judges swear a solemn oath to be guided by the Constitution. That is not a license for them to read their own particular personal views into the Constitution.
Dr. Albert Moeller, president of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary.
You put those two words together, and that's a deeply Christian affirmation, isn't it, that love wins. But what you have here is really a hijacking of something that's fundamentally true that is being used to celebrate something that's fundamentally false.
Alveda King, niece of Martin Luther King Jr.
My uncle, in one of his prayers, as he was uniting a man and a woman in holy matrimony, thank God for the union of marriage and for procreation.
And Pastor Matt Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
I'm not going to be silent. We can't be silent. Our pastors need to speak up. Call this what it is, a lie.
Your comprehensive source for news, information, and truth, Issues Etc. Listen live or on demand at issuesetc.org or on the new Lutheran Public Radio mobile app. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. The devil's always in the details, and it's one thing to read the headlines or even read New York Times story, Washington Post story, or something else on the recent Supreme Court decision to legalize homosexual marriage. It's another thing to sit down and actually read what the justices on both sides said. It's very revealing. And believe it or not, that's what historians will read. That's probably why historians will look back on the decision that was taken by the Supreme Court on Friday and say, you know, it wasn't the best decision in the world. Although the verdict of history may well be that same-sex marriage is a good idea. The verdict of history doesn't matter to anybody. But they're going to have a hard time looking at the decision, especially that of the majority, and saying it was a sound, well-reasoned one. Joining us to talk about that and the dissents from the decision taken by the Supreme Court on Friday, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, senior editor at The Federalist. She's been a guest on network television, AC360, Reliable Sources, Fox and Friends, and The Kelly File. And she's authored a recent column for The Federalist titled Dissenting from Obergefell, Justices Sound Alarm on Religious Freedom. Molly, welcome back to Issues Etc.
It's great to be here with you.
Let's talk about the majority opinion to begin with. Justice Anthony Kennedy, in your reading of his opinion, do you get the sense that he was entirely comfortable with the position he was taking?
Well, he definitely was certain that he was going to arrive at the conclusion that he arrived at, but he definitely also was not very he struggled to explain how or why he was able to arrive at that conclusion, and so his opinion is a train wreck, frankly. It's muddled. It's incoherent. You know, each of the dissenting justices pulled it apart. It's just a very muddled opinion.
What was he, in a nutshell, if you could explain it to the simple-minded like me, what did he say?
Well, he said that there was a he'd found a constitutional right to same-sex marriage, which, as Anthony Scalia put it, means that every state had violated the Constitution for all of the 135 years between the passage of the 14th Amendment and the first time a state permitted same-sex marriages in 2003. But he found this fundamental right. He found it based on all sorts of different reasons, including, oddly enough, that since marriage has a procreative aspect, that to deny marriage to couples who are same-sex couples would be a violation of their equal rights. I mean, that's the level of incoherency that's in his argument. But he claimed to have found this in the Constitution. He wasn't terribly specific about how or where or why. And the four other progressive justices signed on to the opinion, even though almost certainly they didn't agree with its reasoning.
Okay, then let's talk about what the bone, perhaps, I don't know if it is even a bone that he threw to those who were concerned about his majority opinion and religious freedom. What exactly, and this is the devil's in the details, what exactly did Anthony Kennedy say in his opinion about religious freedom?
Yeah, it's really interesting here because his opinion is pretty long, and he provides a total of one paragraph on the major issue surrounding redefinition of marriage, which is how it tramples on religious freedom. He gave all of one paragraph, and what he said was that he would emphasize that that those who adhere to religious doctrines may continue to advocate that same-sex marriage should not be condoned, and that the First Amendment ensures that religious organizations and persons are given proper protection as they seek to teach the principles of their religion. And that is, I suppose, better than saying that he also discovered that the Constitution no longer protects religious freedom at all. But the fact that he limited religious freedom, and again, the First Amendment is quite clear on this, that Congress shall make no law prohibiting the free exercise of religion, which is not just advocating for your views, but everything about your religious expression, and that, you know, of which teaching your faith is just one small part. And each of the four dissenting justices picked up on this and said people who are religious should be deeply concerned about this ruling and how it's going to affect their religious freedom.
So in other words, he slipped in the new definition of religious liberty.
Yes, exactly. So people talk about how, whether you talk about freedom of worship versus freedom of religion, and some people go, oh, that's not really a big distinction, and people have always referred to freedom to worship when they're talking about freedom of religion. And that's true, but what we've seen is that progressives have started changing the understanding of religious freedom to be something that you can do within the four walls of your house of worship, and you better shut up, and you better not act on anything once you exit that room.
So just to put a bow on that, he left nothing in the opinion that in principle would keep someone from using his opinion to further restrict religious liberty.
And quite the opposite, in fact. He also put so much in the opinion to disparage the views of people who retain a natural marriage understanding that he gave a lot of ammunition to go after these people. And in fact, by the way, that's already happening. I don't know if you saw that people are already calling to pull tax-exempt status from churches on the basis of this Obergefell decision.
This did not go unnoticed by Justice Roberts. What did he write? How would you describe his dissent?
Okay, so Justice Roberts wrote the main dissent, and it's lengthy, and it deals with all sorts of things about how this decision is harmful to rule of law and self-government. And so his big concern is simply that the decision steals from the people the right to make decisions about how to order their lives and their laws. And he then gives quite a bit of time to specifically the issue of religious freedom. And he says that the decision creates serious questions about religious liberty, that freedom to exercise religion is actually spelled out in the Constitution in a way that does not match with the way that Kennedy wrote it, and that it is quite ominous that Kennedy didn't mention freedom to exercise religion in his decision, and that people of faith can take no comfort in the treatment that they receive from the majority. That's a quote. And he also talks about the assaults on the character of people who retain a logical, natural marriage understanding, and how these are gratuitous attacks on people that do not bode well for religious adherence.
I want your thoughts there on the swing vote here, and the first time he's done it, essentially doing something that I don't think his vocation calls for here, to put it in Lutheran terms, impugning the character of people who disagree on same-sex marriage.
You know, it's interesting because I don't entirely see that you can arrive at a redefinition of marriage in the courts without doing it. So yes, it's a total violation of it's questioning the motivations of other people. It's wrongly characterizing the motivations, the stated motivations of other people. But it really helps grease the skids toward redefinition of marriage and greater government involvement in that project. If it is true that there is a rational basis for believing that the sexes are different and sexually complementary in ways that are meaningful and foundational to marriage, well, then you can't redefine marriage. So, yes, he's wrong, but that's what you have to do in order to put this new regime into place.
Never one to hold back, Justice Scalia was also among the dissenters in Obergefell. How would you characterize his dissent?
So Scalia is always interesting to read, and he's always very colorful about his what he doesn't like about other people's opinions. What actually concerned me the most when I went through the dissents was that Scalia's was kind of calm compared to the other dissenters. So you're used to him being totally outraged by the muddled thinking or whatnot. In this case, he was outraged, but by comparison, the other dissenters were even more outraged, and that was very telling to me. But yes, he really honed in on how this decision robs us of self-government, which is really what it means to be American, going back to the Declaration of Independence, and that by making this ruling based on five people, and he points out that these five people do not represent Americans in any way, shape, or form. You know, they're all white, they're all from elite schools, they're all from coastal sections. And he goes, that wouldn't matter if they were just being judges. But since they're telling us how they feel and making that a constitution, you know, and then further saying that how they feel is what the Constitution says, the fact that they don't represent people, they don't represent their religious views, they don't represent their political views, is deeply problematic. And that a system of government that permits this does not deserve to be called a democracy.
Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is our guest. She's the senior editor at The Federalist. We're talking about the Supreme Court's dissenting opinions on homosexual marriage. We'll be right back.
For 20 years, we've lifted our voices and instruments to the hymns of Stephen Starkey. Now, CPH has the first ever CD collection of Pastor Starkey's works titled, We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God. This 12-track CD includes nearly an hour of music from the most beloved Lutheran hymn writer of our time. Order now. Use promotion code URA. We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God is only $15.99. CPH.org.
No gimmicks, no shticks, just straightforward preaching and teaching in accord with Scripture and the Lutheran confessions. By the book liturgy, right from the hymnal. No glitz, just Christ crucified for sinners like us. We're Grace Lutheran Church in Racine, Wisconsin. Come receive God's gifts with us. Find out more about us at gracelutheranracine, that's all one word, .net. And like you, we're proud supporters of Issues, etc.
The Church's Music from the 20th Century. The 17th Century. The 11th Century. The 8th century. The 4th century. The best of the Church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Your lifeline to the Lutheran worldview. You're listening to Issues, etc.
The 500th anniversary of the Lutheran Reformation is fast approaching. We have such a rich history as Lutherans, and many people don't realize that. The CLCC offers a seminar called Your Reformation Walk that teaches that rich heritage and helps you appreciate it. The CLCC also offers other seminars designed to help laity learn to appreciate what Lutherans believe, teach, and confess. So invite us to your church. Visit theclcc.org and get details on scheduling a seminar for your church today.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and lay people worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy promotes confessional Lutheran theology through conferences, scholarly exchanges, and publications like Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up for their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. lutheracademy.com. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Molly Ziegler-Hemingway of The Federalist is our guest. We're talking about the Supreme Court's dissenting opinions on homosexual marriage, going through them one by one on this Monday afternoon. Molly, Justice Thomas, he had perhaps the most alarmed dissent of all the justices who dissented. What did he have to say?
This is the decision that the dissent that I wish people would read if they are really interested in religious liberty. And he spent a lot of time talking about, apart from how the decision undermines the political processes that protect our liberty, the decision mostly threatens religious liberty. And that based on the way that they came to these decisions and based on what we know from seeing how this has played out in the States, it is inevitable that sexual liberty and religious liberty will come into conflict, particularly as individuals and churches are confronted with demands to participate in the process, that the majority decision makes only a weak gesture toward religious liberty, and that gesture itself indicates a complete misunderstanding of religious liberty, that it's not just about teaching the faith, it's about freedom of action in matters of religion generally. I mean, that is truly one of the most important things that we have as Americans, and this decision runs roughshod over that. And he also is upset that when states have expanded rights for gay people or changed the definition of marriage, and they've done that voluntarily without being forced to by the Supreme Court, they have managed to work in some protections for religious conscience. And this decision short circuits that process with, as he puts it, potentially ruinous consequences for religious liberty.
So he's saying there that even the states that had, through legislative processes, adopted gay marriage legally, the protections that they deliberately put into their legislation for conscience and religious liberty are now essentially gone.
Oh, they'll almost certainly be pulled back, rolled back, because of the manner in which this was determined to be a constitutional right. I mean, remember, they didn't just say that gay marriage is now legal. They said that it's a constitutional, fundamental right, which is silly, but now the law of the land. I mean, if that is true, then there's no need to protect religious freedom if it's true that this is a fundamental right.
Justice Alito, what did this justice say?
So he also was very concerned about how the language used to arrive at this decision will be used to vilify Americans who are unwilling to assent to this new orthodoxy. He basically characterizes this as a religious doctrine being issued by the court, and that if you are a heretic, you're going to be punished severely. And he's worried that religious people will only be allowed to whisper their thoughts in the recesses of their homes. But if they repeat those views in public, they will risk being labeled as bigots and treated as such by governments, employers, and schools. He says that the whole point of our federalism is that we can live together even if we have different beliefs, and that the way to do that is to, if you want to change something like marriage law, you do that and you also accommodate religious believers. But by imposing its own views on the entire country, the majority facilitates the marginalization of the many Americans who have traditional ideas. And keep in mind that when this has been voted on, it is overwhelmingly true that states actually vote to retain the traditional marriage definition, the natural marriage definition. And we're talking about something like 55 million people have voted to retain natural marriage understanding in their laws. This marginalizes tens of millions of people, not to mention the others who would have voted that way if they were given an opportunity. And he says that this is a grave threat to the rule of law, that if you can invent a new right and impose it on the rest of the country, there's really no limit to what the federal government can do, and that therefore even people who are enthusiastic supporters of same-sex marriage should be deeply concerned about the scope of the power that the Supreme Court claimed in its Obergefell decision.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the media. Then I want to come back to Justice Kennedy at the end here. The media, at least from my perception, is still ordering cases of champagne, and you know, editors are still calling for rainbow flag photo stock. I mean, it's the party's far from over. Do you think they're going to get around to actually reading the opinions both for the majority and the minority at some point?
I hope so. It's really been fascinating to watch the media reaction. Yes, they've been absolutely celebrating this decision, and it makes sense that they've been celebrating because they were the prime activists engaged in changing the definition of marriage. And they did that by obscuring actual arguments for natural marriage and how it's foundational to society and civil society. They did it by caricaturing views against redefinition of marriage, hiding what those views actually were, and generally contributing to a negative situation of civility in this country. So they're celebrating, and they said the whole time Americans might say, well, what are the impacts of changing marriage, how is that going to affect me? They would mock people who said that. It's, how in the world could this affect you? And now within just hours of Obergefell coming down, we've seen media outlets publish pieces in support of changing marriage law further to in support of polygamy against religious freedom laws. We've seen that the ACLU has now come out and said, we were basically just kidding when we said we supported religious freedom. Now that religious people use it to protect themselves against the new marriage regime, we're against it. And also, the New York Times religion writer wrote a piece arguing that churches should no longer have tax exemption, which would be ruinous for inner city churches that are operating in high tax regimes. So that's just within hours. The media have sort of continued their combat against the religious. So I don't know if they think of this as a feature or a bug of the decision that it is so potentially ruinous for religious liberty. But I do hope that they begin talking about it, that people begin thinking a little bit more deeply about what a change to marriage law means for the culture, for churches, for religious groups, for religious individuals who are now vulnerable in the public square. And there's certainly plenty to write about. This is basically like the Roe v. Wade decision of marriage law, in that it takes these discussions away from the people and it enforces a pretty dangerous regime. And we're going to see that this decision, far from calming people down on this topic, is actually going to spark major problems for the years to come.
And then back to Anthony Kennedy for your final thoughts here. There's no doubt he cemented his legacy. What is his legacy?
Well, I think it's just worth remembering again that in his lengthy, muddled, incoherent decision, he gave all of one paragraph to the number one topic coming out of this, which is the clash with religious freedom, our first freedom, the first thing mentioned in our Bill of Rights. And he didn't even think it through enough to, or maybe, you know, maybe he also thinks this is a benefit of changing marriage law. So his ultimate legacy could be the trampling of religious freedom. And it's just fascinating that he spent so little time on this topic as he rewrote millennia of understanding about marriage and its nature.
It's commonly recognized nowadays, since you mentioned Roe, that by kind of the rational legal minds, that it was a terrible decision. But it was, you know, usually it was a terrible decision, but boy, am I glad that they made it for those who approve of abortion. No credible legal scholar argues that that was a great decision. Will Kennedy's decision, the majority decision, be evaluated the same way by history?
Absolutely. There is nobody who could argue that this was reasoned seriously or well. And I haven't seen anybody, even people who are celebrating it, nobody's defending the decision. They're all admitting that if you can get them to the place of admitting they're not defending the decision. They're not saying it was a well-reasoned decision. This will be exactly like Roe in that regard. It's just a train wreck of a decision. But it accomplished what the media and cultural elites wanted to accomplish. And the fact that it expands the power of the court in a way that harms rule of law and self-government and democracy, I think those are also considered features by elites who want to take away our self-determination and whatnot. So it'll probably be exactly like Roe in that regard.
Finally, Molly, how did we get to the point where less than 7 years ago, 52% of Californians actually voted to ban homosexual marriage? And now homosexual marriage is the law of the land in every state.
Well, I think people understood, activists on the other side understood, that when people have a chance to vote on this, they tend to vote to retain the coherent natural understanding of marriage. And so they figured out that they could have this work in the courts. They control the media, they control academia, they control Hollywood, and they control the courts. And so they just operated in the spheres where they have the most influence. And it was a really wise strategy on their part. And it worked. But also it's true that I don't think religious people, even though they knew and they were concerned about this, I don't think they quite understood how serious this would be and how much of a threat to religious freedom this would be. And if they had known, perhaps they would have fought a little bit more vehemently.
Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is a senior editor at The Federalist. She's been a guest on network television programs AC360, Reliable Sources, Fox and Friends, and The Kelly File. She's author of a recent column for The Federalist titled Dissenting Obergefell Justices, Sound Alarm on Religious Freedom. You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Molly, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you.
Folks, you can also listen to Molly Hemingway's presentation at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, making the case for the differences between men and women on the 2015 conference audio DVD. We will send it to a non-conference attendee for a suggested donation of $300 before Labor Day. The audio DVD contains more than 8 hours of teaching, preaching, and singing. You can pre-order it online. Just click the audio DVD logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org. You can also pre-order by check. Make your $300 check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Issues Etc., Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. That address again, Issues Etc., Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. When we come back, the last 50 minutes or so of the program with Aaron Wolf of Chronicles Magazine, we're going to talk to him about kind of the cultural and church nexus on the Supreme Court's homosexual marriage decision.
There is confusion about marriage in the world, but not with Jesus and his scriptures. Gottesdienst, the Journal of Lutheran Liturgy, will be having a conference on Tuesday, June 30th at St. Paul Lutheran Church, Hamel, Illinois, on marriages and weddings. Come and hear the theology of marriage and the theology of the wedding and be strengthened in confessing. Helpful sectionals for pastors and laity in the finest of the church's worship. For more information, go to gottesdienstonline.blogspot.com.
The third commandment teaches us to remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. We do this when we hold God's word sacred and gladly hear and learn it. Jesus invites the weak and heavy laden to rest in him, our true rest, because his yoke is easy and his burden is light. This weekend, rest in Jesus as you hear his word and receive his gifts. If you are in Southern Illinois, you're invited to join Trinity Lutheran Church in Millstatt to rest in the grace of our Savior, Jesus Christ. Learn more at trinitymillstatt.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Hours after the Supreme Court's decision to legalize homosexual marriage, we spoke to Princeton University law professor Dr. Robert George.
Justices and judges swear a solemn oath to be guided by the Constitution. That is not a license for them to read their own particular personal views into the Constitution.
Dr. Albert Moeller, president of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary.
You put those two words together, and that's a deeply Christian affirmation, isn't it, that love wins. But what you have here is really a hijacking of something that's fundamentally true that is being used to celebrate something that's fundamentally false.
Alveda King, niece of Martin Luther King Jr.
My uncle, in one of his prayers, as he was uniting a man and a woman in holy matrimony, thank God for the union of marriage and for procreation.
And Pastor Matt Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
I'm not going to be silent. We can't be silent. Our pastors need to speak up. Call this what it is, a lie.
Your comprehensive source for news, information, and truth. Issues Etc. Listen live or on demand at issuesetc.org or on the new Lutheran Public Radio mobile app.